So our next speaker, Julie Nassif, is a public health consultant providing guidance and expertise on a broad range of environmental health and analytical chemistry issues. Previously, Ms. Nassif served as the Director of Analytical Chemistry at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. So she and Suzanne were colleagues, and part of that, she was also part of those stories that Suzanne talked about, where she was responsible for programs related to human biomonitoring, chemical threat response, childhood-led screening, and forensic drug testing. She has more than 25 years of experience in analytical chemistry, as well as undergraduate and graduate degrees in environmental health and environmental science, respectively. Ms. Nassif is active in the shaping of national policy through her work with APHL's Environmental Health Committee and its Biomonitoring Subcommittee.
So I feel exceptionally old after seeing Suzanne's slide, because that litany of biomonitoring studies that she had up there, I was involved in every one of those, so that's really interesting. I don't have a disclosure slide, but I'm sort of straddling the line here between a government public health laboratory, but I also did accept some payment from APHL for some of the latter work I'm going to talk about with community engagement for the laboratory. So there's my disclosure. I want to talk, reiterate a little bit of what Suzanne said about the essential components of what makes a successful environmental health investigation. And clearly, it's having well-established relationships. In Massachusetts, the laboratory and the environmental health programs have worked together beautifully over the years. I should point out that in the laboratory systems vary by state. So in Massachusetts, we have separate public health and environmental laboratories. In some states, they're combined. And in some states, there's a separate consolidated laboratory that's not part of either the public health department or the environmental department. So one thing that I would like to comment upon is all of those studies that Suzanne spoke about, a fundamental component of those was that there was community input from the very beginning, and that really helped to shape how the study developed and really was instrumental in getting people to participate. I'm thinking primarily about biomonitoring studies and recruiting volunteers to participate in that. And clearly, the key is to have mutual respect and trust. Having those defined protocols that Suzanne spoke about from a laboratory standpoint, those involve not only sampling but analysis and how we're going to report, because I would often have conversations with the chemists around, it doesn't matter how well you do the test if we don't report it, and we don't report it well, it's really just an exercise. Given that you have all of those protocols, you do have to be flexible, because these studies do, or these investigations do, change rapidly, and it's important that we do that. Over the past few years, communication has greatly been facilitated by technology, cell phones, tablets, and that has really helped over the years. I wanted to show you a couple of examples of some of the protocols or outreach that the laboratory had done around chemical threat exposures. This is a poster that the Massachusetts laboratory put out in conjunction with training for clinicians, ER nurses, around if someone presented at the hospital with symptoms that they thought were chemical in nature. It has some signs and symptoms, but most importantly, in the bottom right-hand corner, we did this in conjunction with the local poison control center. It has contact information for the poison control center in the left-hand corner. It has laboratory information on the right. And this poster has been actually very helpful in a number of chemical exposure incidents and having people be notified the laboratory. Most notably was when a fisherman was exposed to sulfur mustard. The nurse in the emergency department, when he presented with blisters on his forearm and leg, she said, "That looks just like the poster that we got." She went to the poster, called the number, and we were able to then not only provide information about who might be able to help from a clinical standpoint, but we were able to collect specimens and confirm that he had sulfur mustard exposure. This is just another example of a protocol of how to collect blood and urine samples. APHL, recognizing that biomonitoring is a key component of environmental health investigations, launched some really nice initiatives over the past 5 years, a position statement underscoring the need that laboratories do not work alone in biomonitoring. They need to work in concert with their environmental health partners, with their partners in the community. An action agenda, and I'm not going to read through these, but most importantly, we developed guidance for laboratories interested in doing biomonitoring, and it's a companion document to one that was developed by the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists that they developed for epidemiologists. Laboratories bring a lot to environmental health investigations, and here's my soapbox speech about involving them as early as possible in the process. They can guide the direction of the investigation. We'll talk about whether it's even feasible to do the testing, have input into what the appropriate biomarker is. Talk about capacity. That's something Heidi spoke to a bit. Many laboratories don't have a lot of capacity, but several do. Those that have our surge capacity laboratories for the laboratory response network in the chemical side, there are 10 nationally. Massachusetts happens to be one of them. I can list the others if people are interested. Those laboratories have considerable capacity to do testing for some agents, and so keep that in mind. The laboratory can help with logistics, sampling protocols. From time to time, the lab folks have gone into the field and actually conducted training with phlebotomists and people collecting samples to ensure that the integrity of the sample was maintained. Tremendous input into the quality assurance plan, because you not only want to test, you want it to be, you know, accurate. And a lot of thought into how to report the results. Suzanne didn't touch much on the fact that all of the laboratories' results go back to them, for the most part, where they would report the results out, the environmental health folks, and they do that in concert with environmental medicine physicians. So there's always the thought about interpretation and risk communication upfront when you're starting these investigations. So early in 2013, I was asked by APHL to look at whether, how could we look at community building for the laboratories. And so as part of that process, I spoke with a number of people around the country in laboratories, Vermont, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Indiana, California, New York. I spoke to several environmental health officials at the state and federal level, at ATSGR, local health. In Massachusetts, we have over 350 local health agents. I spoke to some of them. And I also spoke to a large southern municipal health department, as well as some community groups, environmental health consultants, and educators. And what came out of that was that the lab people are really appreciative of the work, that the triaging that the environmental health folks do and they don't want to go around that process. While the laboratory is interested in raising the visibility of the laboratory, engaging the public in a general way so that the public understands what the capabilities are and so that they have contact information. They really don't want to go around existing processes, and so I just want to say that up front. These are some of the ways that communities express environmental health concerns currently, and I mean, there's nothing revolutionary here, but I would underscore that if there's an established relationship, it's much easier and much more direct to have that conversation. So in 2001, following the anthrax events and 9/11, the laboratories had a somewhat new reality, and we realized that we were targets. And so laboratories sort of pulled in a little bit and focused their outreach efforts to a small group. And those would be our traditional partners, clinicians, public health partners in occupational health, environmental health, federal, state, local. Poison control became an increasingly important partner for the laboratories. And then folks that we didn't traditionally partner with, the FBI, the Secret Service, the military, the medical examiner's office, and academic partners have always been part of investigations, and I'm going to let Suzanne talk more about them during questions, but we did an excellent job reaching out to this group. So now we think, can we now expand our relationships in the community? Are these other folks that the laboratories can engage? And these are sort of the groups that I think we can do more engagement with in an informational way. Residents, community advocates, civic organizations, businesses. The city of New Orleans is doing remarkable things with public-private partnerships post-Katrina, and we can learn a lot from what they've done there. I have very few minutes, so I'm not going to talk too much about them, but there's a lot to be learned from there, as well as in the schools and our educators. Now, how can we do this in times when resources are scarce? We have to piggyback on some existing programs, and ATSGR has a number of publications that are useful for community engagement. CDC has a really cute little app called Solve the Outbreak. Great tool for, especially for engaging students. Professional meetings, laboratory and environmental health partners could go together at professional meetings and talk about community, what the community engagement can be, and community events. I have no time, so I'm going to really go fast. These are just some of the ATSDR resources that are available and directly relatable. If you feel the need to make some custom materials, there are a number of low-cost and free options to do that. These are places that I think we can reach out to the community and engage them. Farmers markets, I think I should be the greatest proponent of farmers markets in the world. These are our new town centers. You see, they're by design, they are intimate, they are designed so that there's conversation between the vendors and the consumers. They provide ample foot traffic, and you have a somewhat self-selected population that's interested in healthy, nutritious food and products, and they're likely to be receptive to information around environmental health. These particular photos are taken, the center photo is from the city of Ithaca, where this is an enormous farmers market where thousands of people go every Saturday and Sunday, and some of these others are from smaller markets. The one on the bottom, you The sign is out of the picture, but they also piggybacked a flu clinic on the farmer's market, which I thought was an ingenious idea, and this is a very small town of only 12,000 people. So, you know, there's something to be learned there. We could have a booth and learn there. Educational settings, middle and high school students are a great population for programs in environmental health. One of the things I did with APHL was develop a presentation for them that State Public Health Lab staff would go out and deliver. The teachers I spoke with were really excited about it, particularly if it went with the frameworks. Important note there is that that model has been used very effectively in tobacco control. Again, adult education programs, underserved populations, often disproportionately affected by environmental health issues, there's a place. Civic organizations, we need to use the medical reserve corps more than we do. They would be a fantastic group of well-trained, well-informed people to help deliver the message. Grand rounds, they're there. Massachusetts does it every year with the Poison Control Fellows. Community events. All of these would be great places for laboratory and environmental health folks to work together. I do want to spend 1 second on this. Laboratories have not been doing open houses, with the exception of the state of New York, which does this rather routinely, has open houses where they showcase activities in a very secure way. They invite the press, they invite the legislators, students, partners, and they do highly visual presentations that and have some hands-on activities. That's something laboratories could consider. Again, they should be joint presentations. Who's going to do all this work? These are some folks who might be able to help out over the summers. These are some other potential resources. I think the MRC and teachers are two groups we know we can engage. And perhaps by submitting applications, we could get City Year and AmeriCorps volunteers. I think we can work to achieve better environmental health investigations if we work together to increase the visibility and the capabilities of the lab, and increase access to our environmental health officials, and engage an even greater portion of the community. Thank you.
So I'm glad we took questions all along because we're officially out of time. But we can take some questions because it doesn't look like anybody's dying to come in. But before you all go, APHL has a website for this project. We have a list. If you want to sign up, if you want to get information about it, stay engaged. We'd love to have ideas and discussions. So Cerulean Red up here is a sign-up sheet. Having said that, thank you to the whole panel. I thought this was great, and thank you guys for your discussion and being involved. We will take a couple questions if you want, but I just wanted to say all that first.